personal foul. Unsportsmanlike conduct.
Astree tackled the quarterback. He's giving them business down there. That's a 15-yard penalty.
Unsportsmanlike Conduct podcast. We're back at it again, Dal. And for the first time in what feels like a couple of months, we got back-to-back weeks with an episode.
Yeah.
How incredibly ridiculous.
It kind of is. Part of it is our fault. Part of it is the summer's fault. Part of it is
silly summer.
My fault.
Now, how dare you go and injure yourself?
I did. I injured myself. I'm going on. This is my fourth week, and I can't tell you how much better I feel than I did, say, 2 weeks ago. I broke some ribs for our listeners that missed maybe that or don't care. And it wasn't even like doing, I mean, here's the thing. If I wanted to embellish and exaggerate and make it sound cooler than it was, I could totally do it. Yeah, crashed on a four-wheeler up in the hills.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, that's not really what happened. I mean, yeah, I was up in the mountains where we used to go as kids, and there was a washout, which is where we've had all this water runoff, and you get these big deep ditches. Even they're not even real trails where we're going. So I mean it's pretty darn rural. Let's put it that way. But we're all on four wheelers, and we've all ridden a fair share. Although I will say, of the group, I was probably the last in terms of experience level. Again, just being honest. Anyway, I've ridden that space before and been just fine. This time I wasn't. I'm not in very good shape. I'm top heavy. I felt like I had to bail off, and I did, and ended up not only falling off going from the four wheeler to the ground, but the ground wasn't where it normally was because of the wash. So by the time I ended up hitting the ground, I'm kind of hitting on a 45-degree angle on the curvature of the wash, and I'd probably gone about 9 feet by that point. Ended up landing on my ribs, my shoulder. So I broke some ribs, separated my shoulder a little bit, and two of my nieces watched it, and they were nice enough not to laugh because they knew I was hurt. but anyway,
what
so
angels.
So in other words, I fell off a four-wheeler. End of story. But I could be all manly and say it was another thing, but I haven't been. I've been very upfront about it. So, give me kudos for that.
Sometimes you gotta. And obviously now finally, feeling a little better, Dal. So we all are excited about that.
I'm actually shocked how much better I feel than yesterday. I'm like, what is going? I felt like a warmed over turd yesterday. I don't know what happened then, but something happened. I feel much better today than yesterday.
Well, on the plus side, Dal, if it makes you feel any better, even with the broken ribs, you might still be having a better week than ex-Northwestern head coach Pat Fitzgerald, who was fired yesterday officially.
17 years with the program.
I believe the winningest coach in Northwestern history.
He's got to be.
I mean, it's not exactly a storied tradition.
I'd say it's probably not even close. He's also just he was in year two of a 10-year $52 million contract, which means they love the guy. He wasn't going anywhere. They had locked him up for the next decade, and it just goes to show you, Aaron, this young generation, if they're motivated and properly, I don't know if they were mad at this guy or what, or if it was simply journalistic endeavor, but it was basically the student newspaper.
Yeah, that broke the story.
That took him down. He was fired. On Friday, it was announced that it was going to be an indefinite suspension. However, over the weekend, I guess more details of the alleged hazing came out. And on Monday, the president and others decided, yep, you're gone.
And obviously, the hazing in question took place under his watch. It was freshman hazing taking place in the Northwestern football program. A shocking amount of it had to do with nudity, which was...
Yeah.
Like, why are genitals involved in every single thing?
I've never understood that element of certain types of hazing, and it happens at the middle school level, high school, at least it has and does. And I'd never understood that kind. I'm like, at that point, I totally agree with the person being hazed. Like, that's not hazing. That's sexual assault.
I am curious, like, because maybe I won't even call it hazing because it makes it sound like I'm trying to indict some of my own former coaches, but certainly there is an element of, ha ha, you're the freshman, let's pick on you, that takes place in every sport.
But, like, making the new guy carry a backpack that's like Dora the Explorer, that's totally fine.
When I was in high school, the rule was the freshman cleaned up the practice, you know, the tackling dummies, the cones, all the
carried the pads.
They had to clean that up after practice was over. All right. Oh, darn it. I'm the freshman. I can't believe I have to go clean up those cones. I think, like, in wrestling, your hazing was for the very first week. All the freshmen had a senior that was, like, on the varsity team sparring partner for the whole week. So essentially, you showed up and you got beaten every single day in your sparring match.
You were a piece of meat for the week.
That was in college, all it really was, because honestly, and this is a story about a college, but by the time you're in college, most people don't really care about the whole freshman thing anymore, apart from, I guess, at Northwestern. We had a rookie show we had to
do. Keep in mind, we don't know how far back this goes, because he started there in 2006.
Yes.
So, I mean, let's be honest. The ideas and consequences for quote-unquote hazing have evolved in the last 17 years, for sure. Anyway, but please continue.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, when I got to Missouri Baptist, they called it the rookie show. Anyone who just transferred in that year or a freshman had to participate in a position versus position, you know, like all the position groups of newbies had to get up on stage and perform a skit of some kind, and the winner got, I think, like high fives from everyone. And we just, you know, dance monkey dance for all the seniors.
It's not a big deal. You know,
I never recall showing up to a locker room in any sport my freshman year of high school or college and just having, you know, naked genitals waved in my face.
Well, and I would echo that. I was in the jazz band at the University of Wyoming. I was a freshman. There were only two freshmen in there out of the 35 people. So, I mean, it was a rarity. You had to, you know, again, tooting my own horn, metaphorically and literally. But it was like, okay, you're a freshman. And there was one other guy, like I said, we carried whatever needed to be carried. So, I mean, you know, you show up at a concert, everybody grabs their own instrument, but if there's anything else, of which there's quite a pile, there you go, freshman. It's going to be about 10 trips. And you know what? That's just how, again, that's, to me, that's acceptable.
I'm picturing, you've seen the video of Nick Chubb doing his back squat?
I used to be less fat.
Where he's got like six plates on each side.
Yes,
and the chains.
Bent.
And there's Dal, and all the seniors are piling all the band equipment on his back. And
you know what? Back then, could have handled it. I used to carry my trombone like a mile and a half to the Fine Arts Building, and the case that it was in, it's probably like a 40-pound thing. I didn't care. And it's just like, now I'm like, I can't even go 40 feet without feeling winded.
For whatever reason, I feel like now I just need to share, by the way, because it's in my brain and it's funny. We would have won my rookie show, by the way, seen my freshman year in college at MoBap, if it wasn't for the fact that the wide receiver / tight end room, we only had one freshman tight end and it was me. So I was thrown in with the receivers. We did a skit called Googling the Coaches. I played the role of the Google search bar.
Okay.
And we just, you know, it was a roast session on every single coach on the coaching staff. We tied with whatever the offensive lineman did because we weren't allowed to watch the other freshmen perform. That was part of it. We had to wait in the hall until our turn. And so the tiebreaker was our head coach told me, he picked me out from the receiver group. He said, you versus Johnny over there, who was our freshman center, in a dance-off. And I'm like, well, I can't dance. I better put on a comedy show here and just hope that he, an offensive lineman, attempts a real dance and can't. So I did the Carlton, got some mild claps. That's pretty funny.
Can you still do the Carlton?
Sure.
Okay, at the end of this, I want to see it.
Johnny, who weighs 330 pounds, he's about 5'9", our center.
I know the feeling.
Hit the most immaculate worm I have ever seen. I'm talking, when he rolled to his chest, his feet were about 5'8" in the air.
Wow.
When he got back to his feet, he was like Michael Jackson. He got all the way up to his tiptoes and then rolled back down. I mean, the whole length of the stage, and I just tapped out. I went, Well, I could be a Russian gymnast and jump in the air and do eight backflips in a row and land it. It's not like I'm beating it.
You could be a grizzly bear on a unicycle.
I'm like, that is the most perfect worm ever hit, and it was by a 330-pound center.
Good for him.
Like, he wins.
I like it when big guys win.
I guess I just lose,
all right,
and
come
I have
on.
No choice.
Show me the Carlton.
Right now?
Yeah.
On air? I don't think we're going to be hitting that right at this exact moment on air. But
come on. I love the Carlton.
How about after we're finished recording?
All right.
The people can't hear the Carlton.
I don't care about them. I want to see it. But anyway, getting back to the topic at hand. Yeah, if it's Gerald gone, there's already rumors that he is going to sue the snot out of Northwestern. And guess what? He's got millions of dollars to do it because he's got it from Northwestern. So don't go away on that. That's going to be, that could turn into a mess.
Yeah, and
it already is a mess, but it could turn even messier.
Considering what the allegations were, I am curious how this is going to play out. So I guess best I don't even attempt to take a side at this point, and we're just going to report what the facts are. The actual allegation wasn't even that he participated. So even Northwestern admits they don't know if he knew about it. It's just he's the head coach.
I think that's the allegation, is that there's no way, quote unquote, he didn't know about it. And I guess, you know what? If you go to a court and a jury, and if that sounds like reasonable doubt to me, just off the top of my head. But you know what? That's for them to decide. But let's just get right down to brass tacks, Aaron. It's an unfortunate situation because some people got, let's be honest, some terrible things done to them, it sounds like. You have a guy that otherwise normally has had a very positive reputation where he was. That's gone, at least unless he's able to rebuild that over a period of many years. So the whole thing is just, it's unfortunate, and you wish that stuff didn't happen. Again, the nudity stuff is what I think puts it over the top when people are talking about it, because it's like, yeah, that's just, I remember, you know, going to high school, and I remember kids getting taped to the urinals. And that was here locally, and they would use the tape with the strings in it, so it was, you had to cut it. You couldn't pull it. But they weren't naked. They're just like taping them to the plumbing.
It's also unfortunate, too.
And I'm not even saying that that's right or that I agreed with it. But at the same time, but now if you, like, take off their pants and do it, see how much worse that is?
Mm-hmm.
Before, it's like, oh, this is embarrassing. Then it turns into, I'm going to need counseling when I'm older. It's just, it's nasty.
I will never forget the funniest hazing stories, like stuff like that. That's gross. That's fine. I still find one of the funniest ones I've ever heard. So, you're familiar with Brock Lesnar?
Yeah,
former current WWE wrestler, and
but
former
UFC. Actual wrestler. If I can use that term.
Yeah, Minnesota national champion, I believe,
he
twice
was a
over.
Stud.
A UFC heavyweight champion, and he tried his hand at professional football for a year. Was terrible
at it.
Yeah, he did. But I still find one of the funniest stories was, do you remember the Williams brothers? They weren't actual brothers, but the Minnesota Vikings had Pat and Kevin Williams.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I do remember those guys.
We just called them the Williams brothers, even though they weren't.
They were good too.
Very good. Much better than Brock Lesnar was, but Brock Lesnar's, initial stint in that preseason, only because then you know that he was going to go on to be a UFC champion and all this. It's so funny to me to think that. They claimed that, and Brock reiterated, he's like, yeah, that happened. He got classically and epically hazed his first practice in Minnesota when Kevin Williams snuck up behind him and took athletic tape and taped his ankles together as he was walking off the field. And as he turned around to see who did it, he tripped and fell. And then Pat Williams hit him with a frog splash off one of the nearby benches. And Kevin Williams counted 1, 2, 3. And they raised Pat Williams' hand in the air. And they slapped a little toy belt they bought at Walmart on Pat Williams. And then they ran off the field.
And then ran.
While Brock Lesnar had to then untape his ankles. And I found that hilarious.
That sounds epic. Yes.
And Brock Lesnar never got his lick back either, because even he claims, he's like, you know what, even honestly, He's like, I was the rookie there, and those guys were just huge. And to hear Brock Lesnar say that he wasn't going to mess with someone because they were just huge is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that's hit the news. No idea who the new coach. This is not good timing. This is not when you want to fire your head coach.
No, Northwestern is preparing for a nice 0-12 run through the Big Ten this year.
So typically, you know, in this situation, I'm guessing you're gonna have an interim, somebody that's on your staff. Of course, assuming the staff stays. For all we know, the staff was part of this. Like I said, this is ongoing. You might lose some more people.
And you know what I'm also thinking here? One of Pat Fitzgerald's strengths that he was always praised for as the head coach of Northwestern, he's a Chicago kid.
Mm-hmm.
He was unbelievable at the way that you always talk about how Wyoming is very good at bringing in Wyoming kids. They're very good at local recruiting. Northwestern was immaculate at Chicagoland area, getting kids that had offers from Oklahoma and LSU and managing to keep them at Northwestern and bring them there. He would always get five or six of these top-end players a year that were from the Chicagoland area with his pitch of, you know, staying local, and he was very good at that. With Pat Fitzgerald gone, how many kids do you think are on Northwestern's roster that only joined on because of Pat Fitzgerald that we're going to see hitting the road here in the next couple of weeks?
When you've been there for 17 years, those are all your guys, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, yeah, you got to believe a good number of them is there because of you. And then with the ability to leave, mm-hmm. yeah, that also bears watching. You might lose 30 kids. 40, who knows? And you don't want to do it now. That's the thing. I guess you can't right now because the portal's closed. But the next time it's open, you might have a ton of guys decide, mm-hmm. you know what? I'm going to go just over here to Iowa State. I'm going to go to Illinois. I'm going to, you know, get to pick one of these other schools. So.
And sometimes it doesn't work this way. But do you remember when both of our teams were heavily rumored to be really high on the Peter Skoronski hype train heading into the draft, the tackle from Northwestern?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Tennessee ended up getting him, and they were patting themselves on the back, and they're like, woohoo, we got... Now, he's a tackle in college. He's projected to be a top-end guard in the NFL. Is there anyone in Tennessee right now going, or do you suppose that... Knowing that Peter Skoronski was very, very likely a part of all the stuff that they're being accused of in Northwestern,
do you suppose
they just let that, that's water off the duck's back. All right, moving on.
He's not there anymore, though. To me, that's a whole other thing. I mean, unless there are criminal or civil charges brought.
No, it's just maybe a looming cloud that's going
then
to exist.
I don't think it's
going to
make, I don't think it's going to make a ripple. With the Titans, they have bigger fish. They have a lot bigger fish to fry. The other thing I just came across, it is football related, so I'm sure you'll be okay talking Woo-hoo! About it. So I like to use Twitter for whatever reason. I've been on there forever, 15 plus years.
For whatever reason is, well, you could have just ended the story right there. I like to use Twitter for whatever reason.
I mean, some people really get annoyed at it, and I'm on it every day, but if it doesn't help me in my job or entertain me personally, I have no interest in it.
Mm.
And if tomorrow it turned into something that was causing me embarrassment or something that I didn't want to use anymore, I'd stop using it. I don't care. But that being said, it's always kind of cool when things happen and you kind of get to chime in and do something. So kind of trending right now, Justin Jefferson, arguably one of, if not the best receiver in football.
If you're going to use the caveat of arguably, you might as well just say best receiver in football.
Maybe he is. but so they were asking him who his top five quarterbacks were. And so he came out and said, and the quarterbacks
were... Please
tell
me Kirk was at least on the list.
He was not.
Justin.
So, no, but top five.
You might as well, though.
He's not, though. Let me throw it out. So he said he had Mahomes, Rodgers, Burrow, Hurts, and Allen was who he said are his top five.
I would say that's the real top five.
So we're supposed to... Okay, so I'm on his side. Because there's people, it's like, oh, man, he did his quarterback dirty. Can't believe he didn't mention Kirk. No, and I'm like, go find anyone. And I like Kirk Cousins. I've said that before on this show. Go find me someone who objectively can say he is a top five quarterback.
He's not. But people expect teammates to just, oh, yeah, you know what? The best running backs in football. Alexander Madison won.
I don't even know if he's a top 10.
And Maybe not.
And I like Kirk Cousins. I wish he never would have left Washington.
And here's the big thing. Like, I'm laughing as I'm saying this. I'm mostly joking around. We all expect teammates to just put their teammates on the list.
But why?
Kirk Cousins isn't going to care.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's the son of a preacher. He drives a van.
So
he doesn't care.
This is much more us having an expectation and then projecting than it is that we're actually concerned Kirk Cousins is going to get mad at Justin Jefferson.
Well, and yeah, I don't think he's getting mad. But I don't like the trend that was coming out of it already was, well, Justin, there's a problem here. Justin, I'm like, first off, this might be Kirk Cousins' last year in Minnesota. And that was being speculated through the whole offseason. And then, okay. And I'm like, is he wrong? I mean, seriously.
Yes, because Aaron Rodgers is no longer a top five quarterback.
He's better than Kirk Cousins.
Yes. Is he better than Justin Herbert, though?
No. I would put Herbert ahead of Cousins.
No, I meant Rodgers.
Oh.
Like right now, in the year of our Lord 2023, is Rodgers still a top five quarterback? After last year?
Yes.
He was awful last year.
I think because of his track record and career, you have to say yes right now.
He was the third, if you're just going off numbers, he was the third best NFC North quarterback last year.
If he comes out this season with the weapons the Jets have, especially at the beginning of the season, and looks not so good, then I will agree with you that he's not.
How about Lamar Jackson? If we're just going to take...
Here's the thing about Lamar Jackson. He's been injured. So to me, if you're talking, is he possibly a top five quarterback? Hell yeah, he is.
On the other hand, he can't throw all those interceptions Rodgers was throwing if he's sitting on the bench safely tucked away.
But you know, Lamar's missed a ton of time. And let's be honest, I don't think Baltimore's done a very good job of giving him receiver weapons. I mean, who's their top receiver right now?
In Green Bay?
No, in Baltimore.
Oh, well, right now it's Odell. But yes, obviously he wasn't there the last
series.
Yeah.
Some guy that, to me, his career is inconsistent at best.
Mark Andrews would be the actual legitimate answer. But
he's a good player.
My favorite is...
I'm just saying he doesn't have a Justin Jefferson.
I did see, and obviously I've already said
Cooper Kupp,
I actually
like
don't
that.
Think Kirk Cousins even has an argument for being in the top five. I think he's a very good above average quarterback. I was just laughing because I knew what the reaction was going to be. You didn't even have to tell me yet. I'm like, oh, did he put Kirk in there? You said no. I went, I know where this is going.
But as a longtime sports person, sports writer, and broadcaster, that's the part of sports that I'm getting really tired of. It's like a damn soap opera. It's like, ooh, today on As the NFL Turns. It's like, who cares? Who cares? It's so stupid.
Speaking of random Twitter drama, can I just say that I also am appreciating... So, evidently, there must just be some random Packers fan that's... He goes on... I don't even remember what his name was. It was like... Bucks MW for life or something. I don't remember. He's all over. Every time the Bears tweet or the Bulls tweet, this dude responds to it for no reason. And I'm like, this is hilarious. And he got into a weird feud with Justin Jones, who said, who retweeted a video of our rookie defensive tackle, Javon Dexter from Florida, doing sprints on the treadmill with a weighted backpack on his back.
Okay.
And he's hitting it, and he put a Kobe Bryant quote over it with, like, put all your eggs in one basket, and if it doesn't work out, get some more eggs, was the quote.
Okay, I saw that one.
So he's sprinting on the...
Okay, I saw this. I saw this post. Okay.
Justin Jones just, you know, beast, and a flexing emoji, and this random dude with Giannis as his profile
random
pic.
Random no-name guy.
Goes, B, beasts don't come in dead last in the NFL. Which, first of all, as a side note, and Justin didn't even bring this up, Jervon Dexter didn't come in last place in the NFL last
year.
He's
a rookie.
He wasn't on the team. Anyway, moving on from that little tidbit, Justin Jones chimed in with, "You have another man as your profile picture." Little suspect there, buddy. And then the dude replied to him again with, "Who are you?" Question mark. And he says, "It's Monday morning at 9:30 a.m. Shouldn't you be at work, or are you currently in your parents' basement?"
Yeah, to me, the player in this case, remind me of his name.
Justin Jones.
To me, he totally won that exchange.
Justin Jones is endearing himself to Chicagoans. And this is, you have two options as an athlete, right? To endear yourself to a fan base. Be really good. Justin Jones is an average defensive tackle, and that's acceptable. So he went the other route to become a Chicago fan favorite. He has spent the entire... He was also the one with the quote of, "All Packer fans are obnoxious and don't know anything about football." He went on public radio to just say Packer fans don't know ball. He spent the entire offseason just crapping on Packer fans. Not even the actual Packers. It literally just Packer fans. Every time he takes an interview, he's crapping on Packer fans left and right. And I'm like, this dude's from California. It's not like he's from Chicago, and he's been a Bear for a year and a half. Not even a half. He's been a Bear for a year and an offseason.
He's a company guy, it
he's
like.
He's just here to roast Packer fans, and Bears fans all love him now. He will get like 3 sacks this year, and it'll be whatever. But boy, his post-game press conferences will be spectacular, and we love him.
His Twitter following will grow. Switching the subject just a little bit. Home Run Derby. Did you watch the Home Run Derby last night?
I watched half of the Home Run Derby until I lost my personal connection to it. But that's okay, because as we talked about in the opening, it has been a hot minute since a White Sox player competed in the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, you were saying Frank Thomas was the last one.
I cannot believe that.
Yeah, me either. At the same time, I guess I had missed the last couple of Home Run Derbies.
I haven't watched any.
I'm not sure why. I used to like it. But the pace now... It used to be, all right, there's a pitch, and then everybody would go, whoa, and they'd watch the ball and see where it lands, and then the guy get ready, and then they'd throw another pitch. Now it's like pitch, pitch, pitch. They are swinging and hitting. They've got 3 and 4 balls in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have all these computer sensors tracking where it's going. The speed off the bat, the speed of the swing, the angle it's coming off the bat. I got to be honest with you. Yeah, it resulted in more home runs, obviously. I mean, who was that in the semis? Hit 41.
Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, Julio Rodriguez.
He plays for Seattle.
But he hit 41 home runs.
The new record.
And then
for a round.
Arozarena hit a...
Arozarena, yep.
Yeah, had a 35-1 round.
That was against poor Luis.
But I just... I was watching it, and I'm like, okay, that's amazing. It's amazing to me. I was amazed at how these guys were making it look really... I mean, because even these guys that are in great shape, that's a lot of swings in, like, 3 minutes or whatever it is.
And poor Luis Robert... did look like he had tired himself out in round one when he got to round two. He was, he didn't even get his legs involved anymore.
But I didn't like it, Aaron. I didn't like the layout of it. I liked the old fashioned. I mean, I'm not saying you have to sit there and gawk at one that doesn't go out. But I liked it when it felt more.
I believe they changed
nostalgic?
The rules 5 years ago. It used to be you had a certain number of outs.
Yeah.
So it was if 10 of your... you have to hit so many home runs before 10 of yours aren't home runs.
Yeah.
Now it's a time limit. So they just throw them baseballs.
But I don't like it. I don't like it as much. I liked... The other one was more... I felt like it gave the hitter a little more time to gear up for the swing. And then also I felt like as fans, I guess what I'm saying is I'm sitting there watching. You don't even get to watch the home run. You're watching the data points and all that crap going on along the bottom of the screen. And you're watching him swing. You never see where the ball goes. You never see where it lands. It's like last night, I believe, was it Luis Robert Jr.? Was he the one that hit the 6 longest home runs?
Yeah, he hit the longest home run of the Derby.
He had the sixth longest of the Derby.
And then he got exhausted and couldn't hit anymore.
And one of the guys flipped out. That was 480 something feet. Whoa! Yeah,
484 was the longest one.
And guess what? Did you get to see it?
That one, yes, because they kept zooming in on it. But
I was disappointed with it. I wanted to see each swing. I wanted to see each ball. And it's almost like it's turned into a speed thing now. And I didn't care for it.
My only retort to that is, as someone who doesn't watch the Derby unless I have a player in it, because otherwise, to be entirely honest, I don't really care that much. At the very least, it made everyone that wasn't Luis Robert go by much faster. Yeah. Like, for fans like me, I guess, is what this one was built for. They're like, all right, so you're just here to watch. Let's say you're a Seattle fan. Like, you're just here to watch Julio. All right, well, we'll get rid of everyone else real quick. They got 3 minutes, and we'll get them out of here. And now, here's Julio. Here's what you came for.
Well, and my counter argument is this better? Is it better because as you watch,
no idea.
They were giving them, like, a timeout of 30 seconds, and they came back in. And then if they hit some kind of bonus, they got an extra minute, which almost all of them did. And so you're looking at that, but that final minute, they're all pretty gassed. I mean, the number.
I am curious.
In fact, Rosarena, the last minute, he didn't hit any. Like, he came back and had that extra minute. He hit zero home runs. Mm-hmm. He had 35, and zero of them were in the last minute. I argue that it's so fast-paced that the numbers really don't bear out. I mean, it can. You can get on a roll and hit five or six in a row and bump up your numbers, your totals. I didn't like it as much. I liked the old, Chris Berman talking about baseball, gawking at it a little bit. It's like, oh, got under that one. And, you see the ball kid, go catch it. And I guess I feel like baseball is always refers to as a pastime. And there's a lot of things that baseball has done recently to make it faster. And I guess I'm just not a big fan of it. I know why they're doing it. Numbers are up as far as attendance. So it's not like I have a leg to stand on here. But me personally, if I'm going to go to a baseball game, I'm not there for it to go quickly. I'm there to relax.
I will say this, though, as a counterpoint. First of all, just going on the Derby itself, though, because I did only have one guy that I was truly interested in. And now Julio Rodriguez hitting that 41 was impressive, I'll say that. But as someone who was just there to gawk at Luis Robert, I did appreciate a couple of things. One, I'm curious to know if he didn't just decide, well, I've won, I'll just tap out for now. And Adley Rutschman, who is from Oregon, and he grew up just barely, like, within an hour and a half of Seattle. He was a Mariners fan growing up. He got a mini hometown welcome from that crowd. Hit 27 in round one. And Luis Robert, as you mentioned, hit his two of 440+, so he got an extra minute afterwards. He would have had a minute of bonus time. But he got to 28 in regulation time and just set his bat down and said, all right, good round, Adley, and walked away. How many do you suppose he could have hit in that round one if he just kept swinging? He was rolling in that first round, but then, he got to round two, and he said, I probably shouldn't have used up all my home runs in that first round.
I don't know. I kind of came away. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. ended up winning it, by the way.
The first father-son duo.
Which is cool. I loved his dad. In fact, I don't think this gets nearly enough press that he's playing on the same team as his dad. I mean, that's just...
Was his dad a Blue Jay at one point?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What team is Vlad Jr. on?
The Blue Jays. I remember Vlad Sr. as an Expo.
Oh, well, I don't know. I guess I always viewed him I always remember him as a Toronto Blue Jay. I'm going to have to look that up.
I know in the picture of Vlad Sr. when he won his home run derby, he was playing for the Expos.
Which is no longer a team, by the way.
No, now, where did they move?
The Nationals.
That's right, yes. Anyhow, so Vlad Jr., Vlad Sr. become the first father-son duo to have ever.
He's got a Blue Jays jersey on. Looks like he played for the Angels, too, for a little bit. I'd forgotten that. Anyway, I think that's kind of neat. Played for...
Just a couple of Cuban Canadians.
Oh, wait, no, that's his kid.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, you're right. Yeah, he did not play for the Blue Jays. Played for the Orioles, the Rangers, the Angels, and the Expos.
Just a couple of Cuban Canadians there.
Yeah. So.
Cuba, well represented, by the way, in that particular home run derby. I think 4 out of the 8 competitors were all born in Cuba.
What's interesting is it's only the second Cuban to win it, though,
mm-hmm.
overall. So they mentioned that last night. So,
but here at the station, we do have 2 slightly bigger baseball fans. And I think most of us, apart from Duke, were worried initially about the pitch clock and the bigger bases and all that.
You guys like it.
And I don't even say that I like it. I just said that I was worried about it, and then I watched the whole season play out, and at this point, I have barely noticed its existence. I went, oh, I really thought that was going to be a bigger deal. Turns out, as long as, when they're not show, because so many people just haven't been getting violated by it, that I guess, I just haven't. It's, I thought when the spring training happened and hitters were getting hit with that, you have to be ready in 8 seconds thing, left, right, and center. I'm like, is this going to be a thing all year? Unbelievable. And then as people, just wait until the season, wait until they get used to it. And I wasn't trusting them. It turns out I should have been, because as it turns out, they got used to it and they haven't been getting hit with
on
it.
On a much lower level, we broadcast high school basketball out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on the western edge of Wyoming. And so a lot of our opponents in non-conference will be from Idaho, and we'll go over to Idaho to play some of these games. Well, Idaho has a shot clock in high school. Wyoming does not.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were kind of talking about that as part of the broadcast, wondering how that might impact the game, might impact the strategy. And we went over and we're doing these games in Idaho. And much to your point, I was surprised how much of a non-issue it really was. The only time it was an issue was like at the end of a quarter or a half, and it was basically just an extra possession. There were a couple of violations over the course of, say, a tournament weekend
mm-hmm.
where you're playing 3 games or 6 games because it's girls and boys, and for it to happen twice in 6 games, it's basically a non-factor. And so, I was like, I don't like it. And then you go there, and it's like, it's kind of a non-issue.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing here.
So sometimes we get scared as sports fans, and I don't want this.
Don't ruin my sport.
I don't want it to set a precedent, though, that now every time a sports league comes out with a new rule that sounds like it's crap, that now they have the opportunity to say, well, we're going to implement it anyway, whether you complain or not, and you just trust us. Haven't we been right before?
Mm.
Like, uh-oh.
Not so much.
But yeah, so the pitch clock hasn't really, apart from the one thing as a White Sox fan, we have the one infamous incident that took place this year that got Steve Stone in trouble when he went on public radio, and when Lance Lynn said that he was struggling a bit this year with the pitch clock, he said, I definitely feel more gassed than I have in previous years as a pitcher, and that's just something I'm going to have to get used to. And Steve Stone, the White Sox color commentator, has been there for a hot minute. Those of you that are baseball fans may know him by his, for all you young ones, for all you little kids out there, catchphrase that he loves, went on The Score in Chicago, and when they brought up the Lance Lynn comment and asked what Steve Stone thought about it, Lance Lynn being a chubbier gentleman on the mound, Lance Lynn stated, well, maybe if Lance worked a salad into his diet here and there, he wouldn't be having so many cardio issues on the, and I mean, Twitter just, like you said earlier, is a nasty place where you're not allowed to ever make a mistake, and they absolutely tore into Steve Stone. And my counter to that at the time was, well, it's not really fat shaming. He didn't walk up to a random pedestrian walking the streets of Chicago, point at them, and say, hey, fatty. Lance Lynn is a professional athlete.
Right.
It's literally, he's paid to be in shape. All Steve Stone did was point that out.
And hopefully that shape is not round.
And actually, the thing I've been joking about since is that Lance Lynn has been significantly better since Steve Stone called him fat on public radio. And I went, whoa.
I can see both sides of this, because you're absolutely right. I mean, I remember,
remember when we all made fun of
David Wells? Remember he used to pitch for the Yankees?
I always think of Eddie Lacy. No one had a problem when the entire internet was making fun of Eddie Lacy for showing up as a running back to Packers training camp at 285 pounds. But when a public figure does it, then it's not okay. Like, you, behind your keyboard, are allowed to make the fat joke. But if Steve Stone does it, then you, the same person, are going to yell at Steve Stone.
I'm also going to say something just from the other side of this. If you are perhaps a fit person or a thin person, and you're making the salad comment, you need to shut your friggin' mouth. Because it's almost as if, this is where I'm going to get a little indignant as a fat man. It's almost like they're assuming we don't know that we're fat. Guess what, Mr. Stone? We know. I'm the one that has to put on my pants. I'm the one that buys them. I'm the one that does all the things that lets me know that I'm fat.
And that's why I was saying,
I don't need you to go and tell me I need to eat a salad. Otherwise, maybe I get to tell you what you need to go do. And it involves your anal cavity. How about that?
My response to that,
and
though,
shoving is something.
It's kind of what I said earlier. Had he walked up to a random person on the street and said this, there's no reason to do that. That is, in fact, just being a dick.
Which has happened to me many times, by the way.
Steve Stone is the White Sox analyst, and the White Sox pitcher just said he's got an 8 ERA because he's like, man, there's just some, I can't get used to this pitch clock. I'm winded. And Steve Stone's initial instance is, well, I think I know why you're winded.
And you know what? Again,
I would like you to stop throwing batting practice if you could, Lance.
So I've said what I'm going to say about the comment, but you make a very valid point. I mean, me and some other people I hang out with were a little overweight, and when we talk sports, one phrase that always comes up is, well, if I was getting paid to be in shape, I'd be in shape. And I think to myself, would I? If I was able to do my job at a level of whatever he's doing his,
mm-hmm.
and let's say I'm, how much overweight would you say he is? 20 pounds?
He's what you'd call burly, I guess. Okay. Not excessive.
So I got to be honest. And so when someone says comments like that, I'm like, I don't know that you would. Because it's just like any job. You're going to do what you need to do your job. And then everything else is kind of bonus. I mean, it's kind of extra. I mean, but again, if he wasn't able to do his job, then I'll bet. I guess what I'm saying is, I'll bet you he gets a lot. He got a lot more harsh criticism in the AAA and AA levels than he's getting now. Because then it's like, do you want to make the show? You better get rid of this.
And I'll say this. I think for Lance, there is the aspect of, well, we think we can still fix it. And he kind of has, because he's been significantly better as the season has gone on. The fact is, like you said, before this year, when conditioning wasn't a thing for pitchers, if Lance wants to, he can grab that ball. In 2015, when he's pitching for the Texas Rangers, and he's like, oh, you know what, I'm a little tired. I'm going to literally hold this thing for a minute. He was allowed to,
yeah.
And it didn't affect him. This year, there's a pitch clock, so there's an instantaneous, was he able to shed 30 pounds in 3 months after he learned the rules? So it's whatever. He still has time, and he's been getting better as the season's gone on. The White Sox, the general manager kind of came out and announced that we're going to be sellers at the trade deadline on August 1st by saying, he's like, right now we have 4 untouchables. Those are Andrew Vaughn, Luis Robert, Dylan Cease, and Eloy Jimenez. And then said, everyone else will take calls for. Essentially, that's the backdoor way of saying, yeah, we're going to be making some trades at the deadline. We're shipping some guys out of here. Lance Lynn is in his late 30s. It's fair to say he won't really probably be a White Sox pitcher by the end of the year. But regardless, he'll improve his pitching and he'll be great for someone else. Maybe go to the maybe back to the Texas Rangers. Wouldn't that be fun? They're really good this year.
Yeah.
You can head back to Texas, have a good year. We'll all cheer for him. Everyone in the South Side loves Lance Lynn, apart from the awful start he had this year, because he, is a big burly dude who likes to swear on the mound. And
sounds like my kind of guy.
Grabs his jock strap after strikeouts.
Not so much.
And not even like as a taunt. Like, I literally mean he just has no basic concept of he's on TV. Like, he's adjusting himself between pitches.
And he's fiddling.
He's scratching his backside cheeks. like he has no concept that people are watching this baseball game. It's so hilarious. Anyhow.
It's kind of like that scene of Naked Gun, the movie, where at the end of the movie they're at the baseball game. And yeah, there's like this part where for about 20 seconds, every player is spitting tobacco juice and readjusting themselves and spitting everywhere. And it's an awesome movie.
Yeah. Strike? Yeah.
Yeah. Strike. By the way, what a friggin' genius Leslie Nielsen
was. We miss him every day.
Oh my gosh.
We need posthumous Leslie Nielsen movies somehow.
Thank goodness.
That's what this society needs.
Thank goodness for those three. Airplane, of course, is a classic.
And the Scary Movie franchise was really good for about three Scary Movie movies. And everything they made after that kind of sucked. But he was in a superhero movie. And was unironically the lone save, apart from Drake Bell was occasionally funny in that as well. But if you haven't had a chance to see that.
Actually, I think I did see that. It's been a while, though.
Leslie Nielsen, very funny in that one with the Drake Bell plays what is essentially Spider-Man. But he accidentally shoots a nail gun at him and he catches it. It goes, whoa, how'd you do that? It's easier than it looks. He goes, He turns around and he shoots Drake Bell's. He's played by Kevin Hart. I think he just shoots him with a nail gun right in the abdomen. He collapses to the ground and Nielsen turns back around and goes, I don't think so.
Oh, we love you.
Why don't you tell me what's really going on, son?
Looking at the sports landscape, of course, you've got one thing I'd like to talk about, at least regionally here, and maybe you have some thoughts on this, or maybe it's just going to be a couple of minutes. On July 1st, BYU, Brigham Young University, joined the Big 12, along with UCF, Cincinnati, and Houston. So just adding to the confusion that is college football, the Big 12 currently has 14 teams.
Remember, the Big 10 hasn't had 10 since 1983.
Yeah. So, I mean, it happens. But their media days, I believe, is next week, but the media has already voted.
Mm-hmm.
And so that came out over the weekend, and BYU was picked to finish 11th. And the headline doesn't help because it's like, picked to pick 11th out of the 12. So if you're not paying attention, it's like, 11 out of 12, that's disrespectful. It's like, well, actually, it's 11th out of 14. But that's it. But anyway, Houston picked 14th. Cincinnati's picked 12th. So the new team's not really faring real well in that vote. But but there's been a lot of discussion. We kind of fall in that regional stew.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's Utah fans, a lot of BYU fans where we live. But we kind of live in a cross-section of a lot of allegiances. There's BYU, there's Wyoming, there's Utah State, there's Utah, there's Boise State. There's even some crazy people who cheer for teams like Idaho State for some odd reason. But it's interesting to me that after 13 years as an independent, BYU gets this invite to go to the Big 12, and they're going to get big money. It looks like $31 million, it looks like, per year, based on the television revenue things that they're projecting. Of course, that might change in a couple of years because Texas and Oklahoma will be leaving. But I look at this, and the big discussion has been, okay, we finally got what we want. Now we're going to get at the big table. And I'm looking at it and I go, you guys didn't even win the Mountain West that much when you were in there. Utah and TCU did, both of which moving on to the Big 12 and Pac-12. Mm-hmm. Or Pac-10 that became the 12. It's just, I don't know, these conference realignments, I just wanted to kind of throw it out there. These schools are all clamoring for the television dollars from football. I mean, that's what's driving everything. But at the same time, what are you going to do when you get there? Are you going to be better off? BYU went 8-5 last year, won their bowl game, 1-point win over SMU. I would be shocked if they won 8 games this year. I'd be shocked, I guess is what I'm saying. And I just, sometimes these teams get to where they want to go, and then it's like.
The one that always strikes me, and because I was in maybe a senior in high school or maybe I was in college when the University of Missouri made the decision to leave the Big 12 and said, we're going to the SEC. Yeah. We're going to the big boy table.
Well, not only that's like, you're not Southeastern.
First of all, they had had a winning record like 8 of the last 10 years in the Big 12. They have not had a single one since joining the SEC.
Yeah, lost to and lost to my Pokes in 2019. It was like, awesome.
Like, maybe you weren't ready for the big boy table.
Well, or maybe that's just what happens. I mean, just based on, I mean, let's be honest. Someone's got to be, in terms of conference standings, mm-hmm. someone's got to be at the bottom of the standings because you're getting beat by the team at the top of the standings. That's just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying BYU will not be successful. I'm not saying that at all. I wonder sometimes if we've gotten way too far away from things that used to make more sense. College rivalries and conferences used to be based on limiting how much you traveled because of regional rivalries. It used to be based a little bit on traditional, you know, rivalry games, things like mm-hmm. that. And I look at the why and it's like, okay, yeah, you're going to get there. You're going to make all this money, but you no longer play teams like Wyoming. You're not going to play Utah State. You're not even going to play Utah every year, which is ridiculous. Those two teams should play every single year. That should be that should be a huge game. Instead, they have this bitter little back and forth about, well, we don't need to play them. It's just like, just shut up and play. But now you're going to go to this other conference. And I don't know. There's part of me that, you know, I'm happy that they're, I don't like BYU,
mm-hmm.
but you know, there's part of it's like, well, good for them. They, you know, there's not a lot of programs that could have weathered 13 years of independence much better than they did. Probably the only other teams are like Notre Dame, obviously. And then
if I hadn't changed, if I had shown up yesterday in my Notre Dame shirt.
But I'm just saying Notre Dame is the exception to that. And then you look at even a team like,
and even Notre Dame, Navy has been heavily rumored into that Big Ten expansion coming up
right.
in 3 or 5 years.
But I don't know. I look at it and I'm like, are your fans going to be happy? Yes, you're going to be flush with money, at least at the moment. But you're not going to play these teams that you used to have a 100-year rivalry with, or 75, 80, 90 years gone.
I will
by
say,
choice.
One of the things I would miss about being an independent, apart from, you know, the thing everyone makes fun of Notre Dame for, well, they get to just schedule in their own cupcakes to sprinkle out the season. And, like,
well,
yeah.
Well, yeah, you can. Well, but the issue with that is if you want to be ranked, and if you want a quote-unquote spot at the college football playoff table, what was hurting BYU was, yeah, you're scheduling these tough teams early on, and then you're scheduling kind of some middle-of-the-road teams to fill out your schedule, but then there's 2 or 3 weeks where you're just getting whoever can give you a game
mm-hmm.
because it's conference play, and teams don't want to play non-conference that late in the season.
Notre Dame, I kind of appreciate right now, in my head, I think of them as rivals just because we've played them so often recently and gone back and forth with these teams. I'm like, you know what? I want to be able to not have to pick, do we want to stay rivals with USC, which is always going to be a rivalry regardless, so whatever. But then we also always schedule Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin from the Big Ten.
Yeah.
We get some of those. I want to be able to play. And we always like to play Clemson here and there.
I say Clemson's been on the schedule quite a bit.
Clemson, North Carolina from the ACC is usually on there somewhere. And I'm like, I kind of like playing all of them. Because if we, let's say we join the Big Ten, and I heard USC's thinking of the Big Ten, so maybe that solves a bit of it.
That's happening.
Yeah. You know, then we don't get to play Clemson as much, and that's a little sad.
Yeah, USC and UNLV, or not UNLV, UCLA,
mm-hmm.
supposedly, yeah, going to the Big Ten.
All right, so we still get Michigan, we still get Wisconsin, we still get USC, but then we don't get to play Clemson. We'll always schedule one SEC team that is usually, through most of my teenage years, was the season, and I say season ending, we'd still make a bowl game, but the end of our playoff hopes was usually down in Athens or
yeah.
something like that. But they would be there. It'd be like, oh, maybe this time we'll beat LSU or Georgia.
I just,
oops.
I, as a guy who cheers for a...
Actually, I don't recall a time that Notre Dame has actually lost to LSU head-to-head, but anyway, Georgia usually kicks the crap out of us.
Well, they usually kick the crap out of everyone these days, but...
Yeah.
but as a guy who is a diehard fan of a team that's not affiliated with the Power 5 or considered a Power 5, those rivalries are more important than ever. Because we are not getting $31 million a year from football television revenue. It matters to me as a Wyoming fan that certain games are on the schedule. We better play Air Force. We better play Colorado State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those two in particular. I like that Utah State is back on after years of it not being a thing. It makes too much sense. It's not very far away.
And can I say,
why would you not play them? I don't like this whole, oh, well, we're on the Pacific Ocean and we're going to go join the Big Ten. I hate that. I hate that USC and Rutgers are going to be conference foes. They're in New Jersey, for hell's sakes.
The invention of the airplane devastated college football.
I don't like it. I don't like that it's turned into this giant stew of we don't care. And I still think regional rivals matter. Anyway, my little soapbox.
One of the rivalries I kind of miss, even though they weren't conference rivals, they were scheduled to play every year. And since Mizzou went to the SEC, that contract has been canceled out. Illinois used to open against Mizzou every year for like two decades. Well, that was week one. You could pencil it in.
Didn't Missouri used to play Kansas for 100 years? I don't think they play anymore.
Yeah, Mizzou, Illinois was a week one tradition on that border. And Illinois is not even my primary team. I'm a Notre Dame fan. But I'm like, well, I live in Illinois. And then I moved to Missouri. So I'm like, I got a stake in this one. I better root for where I was born against all these filthy Missouri hicks. Love you guys. Anyway. Made extra hilarious by the fact that Illinois is actually in like Champaign, Illinois, which is every bit as central Illinois is every bit as rural as the ruralest part of Kansas. Those filthy Missouri hicks have to be taken down. They usually beat us, well, but that's not important.
To quote Grandpa Simpson, I'll be dead in the cold, cold ground before I recognize Missouri.
I think Fairly Odd Parents had the Tom Sawyer episode where he says, I'm from Missouri. You can't beat me in a frowning contest. That's our state sport. It was a great episode.
Oh,
I rag on Missouri because I love you all.
Well,
but it's also very easy. It's low-hanging fruit.
I've never been there. My experience, like I said, is Wyoming beating them in 2019, and that was a glorious evening.
And
loved
there was
it.
Much rejoicing.
There was. Yeah. I rejoiced my butt off. I think we're done, Aaron.
That was all the big news stories, I suppose. The Home Run Derby, we had the father-son history made. Pat Fitzgerald
next
out.
Next week.
Northwestern.
Like I said this last week, and then we didn't do anything this week. Next week, I want to go through some of the divisions of football.
You're going to have to ask the sporting world real kindly to not throw any more breaking news at us.
But I'd like us to look at like at least a division or a conference and kind of go through some teams and like who we think's going to do well. I guess make some projections. How about that?
How about this, Dal? You're a Bulls fan, aren't you?
I guess.
You remember when AK told us, the general manager for the Bulls? I know a lot of fans are disappointed in where the Bulls are at. But I implore you to wait until free agency is over.
Yeah.
Well, free agency is over, Dal. Do you feel like your emotions have significantly changed about the Chicago Bulls?
They haven't, because I knew even as it was coming out of his mouth that nothing was going to change. No one goes, no free agent. I've learned this because when I was younger, I used to believe that they would. Because the whole Jordan mystique, it's a huge city, that whole thing. Free agent. Basketball players, elite ones, do not go to Chicago, period. You could argue the biggest free agent as far as impact that they ever signed in the last 25 years was Carlos Boozer. And he was fine, but he sure as hell wasn't LeBron James or any of these other guys.
You know why that is. And so many teams...
And no, I don't count Dwayne Wade. He played 1 year. If we'd have gotten Dwayne Wade... 10 years before, then yes.
A lot of sport teams use this as a crutch, and it turns out they're wrong. Like, they're, like, in the middle of the pack in spending every year. Yeah. But they just say, oh, our owners are cheap. That's just the... It's a blanket excuse for any fan whose team is bad. That's not even an excuse for Bulls White Sox fans. Legitimately, factually speaking, Jerry Reinsdorf has the lowest... First of all, the White Sox are one of only three MLB teams that have never signed a $100 million-plus contract ever. Our highest contract we've ever given out was to Andrew Benintendi, $76 million. Before that, it was Luis Robert, who had never played an MLB game before. He was an international signing. We gave him $70 million for whatever it was, 8 years or
maybe
something.
Maybe you'll get Shohei Ohtani.
After all these years, Reinsdorf better have been saving up to offer Ohtani $1 billion.
Here's the thing.
That, and the Bulls do the same thing.
Oh, there's... Well, it's not...
It's factual.
And it's just not... It is not an attractive place for free agents. And you got to believe a lot of that is because of the front office and the ownership. Anyway, that's our show. We're going to talk more NFL next week. And hopefully, like I said, we'll see who else loses their job in the next 7 days.
I am already hearing rumors, though, that there are already NFL teams linked to Pat Fitzgerald for next season. I mean, they're already... Vegas is opening up betting pools. So I guess they don't think that this is some sort of career-ruining indictment on poor Fitzgerald. But
to me, I guess it depends on what details come out. If the details keep getting worse...
Like, Pat Fitzgerald personally whipped out his own... new genitalia during the hazing.
Well, or it gets to the point where it was like, you know, Joe Paterno level. Because let's be honest, we never thought that would have happened in a million years, and it did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't know. We don't know how deep this goes or how bad it is. As of right now, he feels like he's been wrongly terminated. And like I said, he's going to sue the crap out of Northwestern, and they're going to say, nope, it was right. And yeah. So he'll spend the next year, see if he can get the extra, or what's owed to him, $42 million from Northwestern, and then he'll look forward to, yeah, we're probably working the NFL next year.
And as we're leaving, since we're already creeped out by how the hazing officially went down in Northwestern, can I also say, I'm not even going to say this was creepy, and the reason I'm going to say that, because once I say it, you're going to think it is, because it just made me laugh.
That's creepy, Aaron.
Yeah. The announcer, when Luis Robert got eliminated from the home run derby, shouting out loud, and that'll be it. A Rosarena moves on. Luis Robert and his tight-toned muscles are out. And I went, is what now?
Yeah, that is creepy.
If I hadn't laughed so hard, maybe. But unfortunately, it was just too funny to have actually been weirded out by. I just kept laughing.
Let's throw it out this way. If it's creepy for someone of the opposite gender to say, then it's creepy for you to say. So if a female sportscaster had said that, people would be like, that's not cool. That's
kind
of creepy.
Have you ever seen Luis Robert, Dal? I probably would have just nodded.
I watched it last night.
I'm like, you know what? I understand, lady in the booth. Or in this case, gentleman in the booth.
Nah. Creepy. Well,
speaking of tight-toned muscles, Dal... Your boy Chase Young is linked to yet another team. I'm hearing rumors that the Baltimore Ravens...
Not a chance.
...have offered Patrick Queen...
They will never.
...a second and a fourth.
They will never trade Chase Young to the Baltimore Ravens. That is such a bitter... I mean, they fight for the same fans.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason the Ravens have done so well in the last 25 years... is because Washington's had such a crappy product for the last 25 years. All of those fans used to be Washington fans. Not a chance. Not a chance in heck.
They up it?
I mean, there's always, if you feel like you're fleecing somebody, but if there's not a first rounder involved, I say not even a chance.
There is a version of reality, Dal, where what they've already offered ends up backfiring on him, if you think about it. I mean, we all still have hope for Chase Young.
Yeah, but I mean, considering they picked him number two overall.
Considering his injury history, I mean, if he just keeps doing that, and you got a second, a fourth, and a former Pro Bowl linebacker from Baltimore for him, suddenly you're going, Oh, you know what?
You're right. as far as the compensation, it actually sounds fair.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be absolutely
There's
shocked.
There's just a twinge in your eyes.
I would be absolutely shocked if they did anything that Baltimore felt like, because you would never hear the end of it. If Chase Young went to Baltimore and broke the sack record, you would be like, yeah.
I do find it funny, though, that you mentioned that, because Cubs and White Sox fans are very similar. We all hate each other, and so we never want to trade with the other. And yet there's like a decades-long history of those two front offices trading constantly, and they have never had a fair trade in the history of that. One team always, every time, absolutely just trade molests the other team. And the most infamous one, and unfortunately we were on the wrong side of it, was when we traded Sammy Sosa to the Cubs when he was still a prospect and got essentially nothing in return. We countered that with the Jose Quintana trade.
And now there's the ghost of Sammy Sosa.
when Quintana was the White Sox ace, so we sent him to the Cubs, who were ready to compete. So like, we'll give you a bunch of our prospects. So they gave us, I want to say it was Dylan Cease, Eloy Jimenez, and a draft pick that turned into... I don't remember, but he ended up being a starter as well. So we essentially got three starters. Two of them have been all-stars. Eloy Jimenez has personally had three walk-offs against the Cubs, which is always hilarious. And they got Jose Quintana, who immediately, the instant he put on a Cubs uniform, his ERA went from being the best on our team to, I think it was in the sixes for the 2 years he was with the Cubs until they just traded him and gave up on that. And then White Sox fans went,
all right, that's enough.
Very funny.
But yeah, we always say we're done. Then we go five more minutes.
Yeah. Five is being, I bet that was 10 minutes ago.
All right. Well, you got something extra to listen to. Of course, you can always catch us. Where can they listen to us, Aaron?
Call that the free bonus time, just like the Home Run Derby. That's everyone gets it.
Bonus time for everyone. Where can people find us?
They can find us on Spotify, on YouTube, and at svinews.com/podcasts. See you guys next time.